United States versus Hampton. Mr. Funes.
Good morning, Your Honors. Freddie Funes for Appellant Shane Hampton. The government indicted Mr. Hampton on 4 counts, and he was convicted on 2 counts. In count one, he was convicted for conspiring to commit offenses against the United States, and in count two, he was convicted for conspiring to commit wire fraud. Count one needs to be reversed in part because the government did not provide sufficient evidence that the transaction at issue here, dealing with crypto tokens, was an investment contract as that term is defined by the Supreme Court's Howey decision. A related issue that sort of compounds this entire problem is that the jury instructions also failed to clarify when defining what investment contract was, that any expectation of profit must be reasonable, and that when something is basically, the profits are based on market speculation, that is not enough to make that transaction an investment contract. Counts one and two should also be overturned based on the sufficiency of the evidence. There's just not enough evidence in the record beyond a reasonable doubt to conclude that Mr. Hampton conspired with anyone to commit wire fraud or to conspire to commit any act against the United States.
May I ask you on the definition of a security, I understood your argument in part to be a challenge to the constitutionality of the statutory provision that defines either an investment contract or whether it constitutes a security. Are you still maintaining that constitutional challenge, or are you just saying in this case the court misapplied or misinterpreted the law?
So that is one of our arguments, though, as the government raised, and I think correctly, it would be under plain error, any constitutional challenge, which I think is difficult for us, given that Howey is a Supreme Court opinion. But I think part of our argument is simply just given the facts and the evidence in this case, there's just not sufficient evidence to say the transaction that took place here is an investment contract if you apply Howey as interpreted by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. In particular, when we're talking about an investment contract, under Howey, you need something that there's an investment of money for a common enterprise with the expectation of profits to be derived solely from the efforts of others. And this court has interpreted that language, has interpreted the case law. And basically what it says is, all right, any expectation of profits has to be, it's an objective thing. It's got to be reasonable. And in the Mutual Benefits Corporation case, this court specifically held, hey, when the profits to be derived are purely market speculation, that's not really a reasonable expectation of profits from the efforts of others.
So you don't have just investor speculation. You have comments from co-conspirator telling potential investors, you're going to make good money back, or you're going to see some returns on your investment. Isn't that more a direct comment from someone trying to increase their number of investors as opposed to a random person seeing the market and saying this looks like a good opportunity?
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. That there is, and I think the government on pages 28 to 29 of its brief did sort of cite the evidence it believes shows that this is an investment contract. But I think there, and I agree that the record does show that there was, for example, I think Mr. Kane went on Telegraph or Telegram, I forget the name of the application that he used, and somebody was complaining that the crypto assets were declining, and he said, don't worry, we're providing a robust ecosystem for utility tokens. But I think what the gap is that there's nothing in the record showing that even if you did have a robust ecosystem of utility tokens, that it would in any way sort of mean that you, as somebody who owns a token, would have any expectation of profit. There's just this gap.
Why are people buying these then? What do you think this is if not an investment?
So I'm not saying it's not an investment, but I don't think it's an investment that objectively and reasonably is based on the efforts of others. So, for example, if I bought a baseball card with the expectation that in 20 years it's going to be worth more because the player is amazing, or a Messi jersey because, people love Messi, and I think in 20 years the market is going to increase and somebody's going to want to buy that Messi jersey for a lot more than what it's worth today. There's no question that that's an investment on my part. There's no question that I subjectively expect it to go up, but the value of that jersey, just like a value of a token here, is completely not dependent on the efforts of others. And so that is the argument, I think, that I'm making.
But for whatever reason, many people thought that these were a good idea to buy. I have a lot of questions about a lot of choices in this industry. But there was obviously an impression given, at least, that there was some kind of inherent value and you could use these, and the company was creating this great ecosystem. Why wouldn't that be enough to at least suggest that the efforts of this company would be enough?
Yeah, that's a good question, Your Honor. I mean, the issue that, and maybe I'm just not smart enough to come up with an actual explanation, but the issue I am having is that, true, they were creating an ecosystem. They are trying to say, this is going to be amazing, this is going to be wonderful, but there just seems to be a gap between we have a wonderful ecosystem and this token is worth something.
There's a gap, but I'm not sure that that is a, I'm not sure it's a legal gap so much as a gap in the appropriateness of someone's expectation about what these things can actually do.
Well, and that's sort of my point, because I think the expectation has to be objective and it has to be reasonable. And so I think if we take away, sort of strip crypto tokens out of all the esoteric mystery of what a crypto token is, and just substitute it in for something else like a Beanie Baby, right? If I have a Beanie Baby store and I'm gonna market these things, it's gonna be amazing. You buy a Beanie Baby, we're gonna take this to the top of the world. I don't think anybody would say, well, just because I'm making those statements that this is some sort of investment contract.
No one's even asserting that those Beanie Babies have some independent purpose, right? I mean, there was the suggestion that these tokens had some purpose and would be useful. And I guess in some theoretical world, a token could be useful. But there's the idea that these would be useful ways to work in this ecosystem or whatever, as opposed to these are going to just sit there, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. I agree with that. That being said, I think if you look at, for example, and for the most part in our briefs and in the government briefs, we've relied on district court opinions just because, for whatever reason, district courts, especially in Central District of New York, have dealt with this issue the most. If you look at, like, for example, the Coinbase opinion or the Terraform opinion, there were other trappings there. For example, in those, I think they got the crypto assets and they pulled them together and they promised the participants of the pool that, hey, we will pay out some sort of profit. That's an investment contract, right?
I mean, that's not anymore, right? If you sold your Beanie Babies and also promised a profit, I mean, I don't think that example is any different, is it?
Well, look, I think with the Beanie Babies, it would be if somebody was like, hey, if you provide me your Beanie Babies, I will pull them together and whatever profits is earned, I will manage and then provide to you. I mean, so you're basically relying on the efforts of the manager of the pool of the assets. But here, there's just really, other than a very abstract promise that this ecosystem is going to do something, there's really no particularity as to how these tokens are going to be profitable. And in fact, if you look at the record,
is a false promise any different than a true promise? I mean, there are a lot of false promises made, say, by Enron, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a real, like, Enron shares weren't a real investment, right?
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. But I also think we got to be clear not to put the horse before the cart. I mean, the question is this an investment contract? And if it is an investment contract, then are the promises made a violation of this, as you know, the Securities Exchange Act?
You still have to determine first, is it an investment contract?
Correct. And I think if you look at the record, too, the best evidence, the clearest evidence really is the testimony of the purchasers of the Hydra token here, who both basically said, one, used the word speculation, and the other one said, well, the main reason I bought it was because other crypto was going up and was fairly, I think they said, very quickly going up in value. And that is just pure market speculation, which I think under the SEC versus Mutual Benefits Corporation case is not a reasonable expectation of profits. I see my time is running out, Your Honor, so.
What about knowledge? You say your client, there was insufficient evidence to support his knowledge regarding this fraudulent scheme, and yet his fingerprints arguably are all over the scheme. I mean, he was in close communication with the co-conspirators. He was the one who actually orchestrated the payments to the market maker. So what is your argument in terms of there not being evidence that he was aware and actively participated in the scheme?
Sure. Look, I'm not up here saying there was no evidence. And in fact, I think the government in its brief, to its credit, did a very good job of explaining here are the specific communications in the Slack channel where Mr. Hampton actually did communicate, did respond, did talk about the Hydra tokens. I think our position is that if you look at those communications, which aren't all of them, I mean, the Slack communication is 56 pages long. And if you go through it, there's just days where Mr. Hampton doesn't respond. And there's some things being said in there where you're like, wow, you know, somebody saw that. It's kind of hard to say that they were not in on it. But there's just days where, you know, clearly Mr. Hampton doesn't respond. Our position is that if you just look at those communications in which Mr. Hampton did in fact respond, it's not enough to create a reasonable inference that he agreed to participate in a conspiracy.
Okay. My last question is, what about the mistake of fact jury instruction? The court found that just saying that you relied on counsel's advice to say you could hire a market maker is not the same as saying counsel told you you could engage in a fraudulent activity.
Yeah, look, our point on that is, and I agree that he was not trying to raise a defense of counsel. You know, the counsel told him he could do this. Our argument there is just it's a very low burden. And Mr. Hampton's defense is just that he was very busy, did not really review these things, and was told by counsel originally that what they were doing was okay. So he just, in the back of his mind, he wasn't looking with any sort of alacrity, if that's the pronunciation of that word, these Slack messages to see if there's something nefarious going on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors.
Mr. Lieberman, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Dave Lieberman for the United States. Sufficient evidence supports Mr. Hampton's convictions. No other reversible error occurred. This court should affirm. I'll start with the investment contract question. I first want to emphasize the standard of review. We're here on a jury verdict. It is Rule 29, and it is, could a reasonable jury, viewing the evidence at trial and inferences at trial in a light most favorable to the government, find that the Howie investment contract definition is satisfied? And the answer is yes, for a number of the public statements that I think, Judge Abudu, your question referenced. We tried to chart this out on pages 27 through 29 of the government's brief. The company released a public development plan for the token. The president went on the official Hydro chat and touted the token's future practical uses, the company's effort to integrate the token into other platforms, other computer applications. 40 platforms have implemented the token. We have a plugin for WordPress. We're working on other plugins for other popular applications. That is all evidence, objective evidence released to the public that a reasonable investor could credit. And going to Judge Grant's series of questions about linking those public statements to the token's value or potential future value, the jury could reasonably make the inference that as the token starts having practical uses connected to it, as it becomes more popular, demand increases, and then price increases. And not only could they make that inference, the government presented direct testimony in the record on this. This is document entry 276, page 161. Mr. Chorlian, the software developer of the token, we asked Mr. Chorlian, if the token was going to be have legitimate value, who was going to create that? Answer, the company. He continued, because the value for the token would have come through demand to use the token through these different APIs, application programs. And so it was contingent on the company closing deals with partners and different businesses to get them connected to the platform. So not only is it a reasonable inference, we had testimony linking the token's future development, future expansion to other computer applications to its value. And the jury was entitled to credit that testimony. Final point on this, the jury was also entitled to credit the testimony of the two individuals who purchased the tokens who testified at trial. We view their testimony a little differently than defense counsel. Both of them testified that they reviewed the development plan. They inferred that the company was building out an ecosystem, had a plan for the token. The company had a development plan, future ideas for the token. This roadmap showed potential for the token's development and growth. So this gets us right, I think, squarely into the definition of what is an investment contract under Howey. A reasonable jury viewing all this evidence in a light most favorable to the government could easily conclude that the folks who purchased these tokens expected that any future profit or returns that they might see would have been based on the efforts of the company to develop the token.
I mean, it seems from your friend on the other side, Mr. Funes, that their argument seems to be it was so highly speculative that it couldn't have possibly been an investment contract.
So my response to that is the division of the dividing line that this court identified in the Mutual Benefits Corp. decision. What is that speculation tethered to? Is it just to overall market trends, like they dropped the token in and everybody thought maybe the tokens are going to go up? I agree, that is not an investment contract. But does it fall on the side of the line where the speculation is tied to the token's future growth, practical uses by the company? And we had evidence of that here, and the jury was entitled to credit that.
So the government's view is it's something that doesn't even arguably have independent use or value, like, say, a meme coin, that wouldn't qualify as an investment contract because there's no suggestion that someone's efforts are really putting value into that aside from kind of whatever speculation and hype there is?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. So just a token out there in the ether without anything else, I struggle to see how we satisfy the Howey test.
What if there's a really purportedly attractive cartoon, right? And you say, this cartoon has value and I'm printing, you know, a million of them and everyone's going to want one. Do you think that level of at least asserted value would, I realize that doesn't affect this, but I'm curious how far the argument goes.
I think this would be a tough road to hoe for the government because we're missing what we have here. And I think in the other cases, which is efforts by the company to say, whatever instrument we're talking about, I'm going to develop it. Here are my development plans to build it out, develop practical uses to increase its popularity. So just having an instrument and copying it over and over and releasing it and saying that you may like this, it's really good. I think that's a tough road to hoe for a jury to find the Howey test satisfied.
Isn't that one of the issues really that the jury heard about, which is that they made an effort to, in essence, have fake purchasers, right? Because they had a company that developed and was developing these bots that created like the illusion that the token had become more popular than it in fact it was.
Yes. So what we have, the deception, which is sort of in the back room, fake volume, both inflating prices, but at times deflating prices, depending on what the tactic of the day was. That's in the back room. But in the front room or public-facing statements are, we're developing the token, we're increasing its popularity.
But I'm saying it's done in connection with the plan, I would call it like the business plan, but it's sort of like this is what our idea is for potential for the growth of this token.
Correct. This is all of a piece, all part of the same scheme.
So if they had not had a business plan or a development plan, would you have been able to satisfy Howey?
If we take out all of the public statements about the development plan, their future growth?
They just threw it out there, the token, didn't have a...
I'm struggling to see how that would be sufficient evidence under Howey of which a jury could credit.
So there is some sort of bright line test here.
Yes, and it's going back to the old Fifth Circuit's decision in Roe, which was binding on this court, it's a question of fact for the jury. The jury gets to decide, is instructed on that dividing line and gets to decide which side does this scheme fall on. And my point here today is that a reasonable jury viewing all the inferences and evidence in the light most favorable to the government reasonably found that this was an investment contract in light of both the objective evidence of what the company and the co-conspirator were sort of shooting into the public space, as well as they could credit testimony from the investors saying we consulted and relied on the development plan.
And even if they actually had no true intentions to create a usable product, it's enough that they created the impression or attempted to create the impression among investors that it would be a valuable, usable product, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The Howey test is from the perspective of sort of the reasonable investor on the ground. It is an objective test. Of course, subjective motivations of people who actually invested in the token, purchased the token, are relevant to that objective inquiry. But at bottom, it is what would a reasonable investor perceive at the time of the scheme.
And I can't recall, too, that the efforts to kind of increase the value don't have to be on the part of the person selling the item, right? It could be on the seller, could be some third party.
I don't know what I know that this is in some of the district court opinions, and I candidly, I don't remember what those courts said, but yeah. In our case, this is the company and co-conspirators.
Right.
So the third party question about is not really presented, and we didn't.
Interesting, but maybe not here. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The other half of the sufficiency question is, of course, could a jury reasonably find that Mr. Hampton knowing involuntarily agreed to participate in market manipulation? The Slack channels, which the court brought up with opposing counsel, they could see on particular days Mr. Hampton being fully engaged in the scheme, consulting with and at some times selecting the particular tactic that Moonwalkers was going to engage in. We've also cited evidence that the president of New Moonwalkers, his testimony, that he told Mr. Hampton about the bot's features. Mr. Hampton then is on private messaging, talks to co-conspirators and says, I do think their bot is the best. And that is additional evidence from which the jury could credit that Mr. Hampton is aware of what Moonwalkers is doing and in fact retained Moonwalkers precisely to use their bot. Judge Abuda, you asked about the district court's denial of the mistake of fact instruction. I want to just maybe bolster one point that in our answering brief, for reversible error to occur for the denial of an instruction, this court would have to assess whether the charge as given encompassed the desired defense. And the district court said, like, I'm not giving your mistake of fact instruction. I don't think you've laid a factual foundation. But the district court also made clear that the rest of the instructions adequately covered that issue. And I'll stress the point, like, the elements of securities fraud and wire fraud required the jury to find that Hampton knew the unlawful purpose of the plan and willfully joined in it. So to find Mr. Hampton guilty, the jury had to find that he knew about the Moonwalkers' price manipulation and knowingly entered an agreement with Moonwalkers to engage in it. And that is precisely why, in closing, the defense was allowed to argue the exact defense that I didn't know, I was just searching for a legitimate market maker. I thought Moonwalkers was a legitimate company, and I didn't have the knowledge required for these charged offenses. So we don't think that the district court erred in any way in denying that mistake of fact instruction. There was absolutely no evidence or proffer put on of Mr. Hampton's subjective belief. In fact, all the chats suggested otherwise, that he thought Moonwalkers or recognized that Moonwalkers was a market manipulator. But even if the court somehow erred in denying that mistake of fact instruction, the rest of the instruction allowed Mr. Hampton to advance the same defense that he would have under his proposed charge, and Mr. Hampton's counsel expressly did so in closing argument. There have been a number of other claims raised in this case. I'll just pause to see if the members of the court.
I'm curious about the gain calculation. I mean, in this case, and I don't want to conflate it with Mr. Kane's argument, which perhaps is a bit more robust because I don't think there's the concession that exists in this case. But it does seem, I mean, we've just talked about how unpredictable this market, this kind of cryptocurrency is. And then you've got bots that were used. So we don't even know if we're talking about real investors or fake investors. And yet you've got a $1.3 million gain calculation here against him. Can you explain to me the government's position?
Sure. Yes, Your Honor. All the factual observations that you made, we agree with and are true, but we think that supports the district court's decision to find that actual loss was not could not be reasonably calculated in this setting. So there were 5,000 plus purchasers of the token during the conspiracy period. And as Your Honor just mentioned, on top of all the actual trades, there was a bot that was executing thousands of fake trades or spoof orders per minute, overlaid on top of the actual trades. The bot at times was artificially inflating price. Sometimes it was artificially deflating price. And then all the records in this case go to one cryptocurrency market, but price swings on one market could logically extend to price movements on another market where the token is. And so we think that all that supports the district court's factual conclusion that it's really hard to calculate actual investor loss in this setting. We're going to go to the gain as the alternative number. And the district court here said, based on what I've seen, the gain is likely to be a more favorable number for the defense than if I could somehow calculate the loss. And this is at bottom line a factual question pertaining to the record. So it's hard for me to see, in this case, the district judge who presided over this trial made a factual error appear on clear error and say it in determining that actual loss, in light of all the complexities that Your Honor has cited, is just so hard to calculate here. I'm going to use the alternative measurement. Unless the court has any further questions, the government asks that it affirm. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Funes, you've reserved 4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I think the takeaway is, and I don't think the government's ever argued this, and I would agree that crypto tokens by themselves are not investment contract. And so the question is, what else do you need to make a transaction that involves crypto tokens an investment contract under Howey? And there's got to be a line, right? So for example, if like in Coinbase, there's a specific application that the crypto token is using, and the person's like, hey, this application is going to make these tokens the most, you know, like the number one token in the world, you need to get this. That is clearly.
Didn't they suggest that these tokens were going to be useful?
Yes, they did. But it's one. That's sort of what I'm saying. On the other hand, if they're just like, our tokens are going to be the best tokens in the world, is that enough to make a transaction an investment contract? And I would proffer that it is not. And here we are closer to that. There is no direct application. There is no explanation of what these tokens can be used for, really, or will be used for. Judge Grant, to your point, you know, NFTs. I mean, those are crypto tokens. They have an application. They, for whatever reason, back in the day, people were paying a lot of money for these unique links, and now they're worthless because the market speculation went away. And so I do think there is a line between, and on one side of the line, it's just not good enough to be an investment contract. It's just not a reasonable expectation. What matters for the profits to be earned is market speculation, not the efforts of others. And I think we're on that side of the line, given the amount of evidence here, which is just sort of grandiose statements of like, this is going to be the best ecosystem for utility tokens. And in contrast, you know, even the witnesses themselves said to a large part, the reason they got these tokens were because the crypto markets were hot. I think Judge Grant, you asked about other parties. I agree with the government here. If you look at Docket Entry 122, the jury instructions specifically define the efforts as being the efforts of hydrogen technology or any of its co-conspirators. On the Tyler Austin issue, I disagree with the government. If you read his testimony, he did not say that he showed Mr. Hampton the bot. He did testify that first, then he sort of backtracked. Then he said, I don't really know if it was him who I showed it to. I did show it to the team, but I don't know who was there when I showed it to them. Then they asked him, well, did you explain what it was that the bot could do, that it could do these spoof orders or these wash trades? And he said, I believe so. So it's not clear at all that Austin did specifically say, I showed Mr. Hampton what this bot could do. The only real evidence of any role or any knowledge that Mr. Hampton would know about the conspiracy comes from the Slack messages in which he responded and talked to the other members of Moonwalkers and Hydrogen Corporation. And there's a bunch of other issues, but we will rest on our briefs. And unless the court has any other questions, I would respectfully request that counts 1 to be reversed or remanded for a new trial.
Thanks very much.